you wrote that song, right? I'm amazed that I've been sitting in here, and because the way we're seated, we can see each other. I'm amazed that people are singing along with you. You've only done that song once, right? That could be platinum, baby. That could be platinum. Yes. Well, welcome to Crossroads, the very last service, not just last week, and the very last service in this building right here. Yes, yes. It is exciting, but at the same time, it's a little bit nostalgic, kind of memory lane. There might be a little sadness in some ways today, and that's kind of what we're going to do today. We're going to mark some moments that have happened in here. We've got a different setup, partially because we're going for a different feel, also because we don't have some of the computer capabilities that we normally do. We're recycling, obviously, chairs are all over there and being bolted down, and also computer equipment that drives video screens and everything is unplugged and taken over there, and so this is a very sort of, in some ways, unplugged service. And glad that you're with us. A few things we want to make you aware of before we do anything else. I'm always kind of weird in this, like, theater around, right? So I'm always want to, like, be serious. Do serious now. Do these jeans make my butt look big? I'm just like... That line worked every single time, did it? Do a little introductions before we do anything else. We have Steve Emanuel here. Everyone say hello to Steven. And we have Dave Eberhard, Johnny Cash, look-alike here today. Everyone say hello to Dave. Greg Hansen. And Josh Sirkamp. Josh Sirkamp. Man, they like you more than everybody else up here. I think they're trying to figure out the scarf, what that is about, that scarf thing. That's.
I have a scarf.
You have a scarf thing. Are you cold?
No.
No? All right.
He wears two things around his neck at one time.
You're barbaric, man. You're barbaric. You're really good. Okay. Stephen, would you... Stephen has been having a big impact around here, not just in his songwriting abilities, but in his singing abilities. I mean, one week he sounds like Bono. The next week it's Cat Stevens. And sometimes he reminds us of Shania Twain. You know, all those things are... I think Shia Tan worked better than Faith Hill. Then where are you going? What do you want? Oh, you want the other water? Yeah. I'll get it for you.
Okay.
All right. And but he's had a bigger impact around here than you realize, because behind the scenes and meetings and sort of his personality has been affecting this place. And part of the Death of Religion series has been born out of some of the things that he's fought against in his life, and I know he's influenced me greatly and positively. I'm just so thankful that you're around. And people don't really know all that much of your story. Just share a little bit about what this Death of Religion thing and how that's tied to your story.
Well, the first thing that anyone would need to know about me is that I was not only raised Baptist, I was raised Texas Baptist.
Baptist.
So, dyed in the wool. I think that I... probably grew up feeling this overwhelming sense of general guilt that I probably wasn't, however much I might have been reading my Bible, it probably wasn't enough. However much I was trying to pray and talk to God, it probably wasn't enough. And however much I was talking to my friends about Christ, it wasn't enough. And when I talk to friends now here in Cincinnati who have a sort of post-Catholic guilt and kind of deal with the whole, well, I haven't been to Mass, you know, in a while, and that feels weird to me. I understand that. I've been there. Solidarity. Yeah. And so I was very involved, you know, the way...
Because Texas is the Baptist, as Cincinnati is the Catholic, or for me, Pittsburgh is the Presbyterian.
Right. So... the way to be close to God growing up for me, the only way I knew that you pursue God is that you pursue a closer and closer relationship with whatever religious organization you have to be a part of. That's really weird to say, but that's true. So growing up, I just went to more and more and more stuff, and I was really, whatever they had to give, youth or whatever, I was there and I was getting it. And, As I went into my mid-20s, and I grew up with a lot of sort of cynicism about stuff, but I didn't know that there was any way out of that. And then God started talking to me about the fact that He wanted to remove all of the effects that a religious spirit had had on me. Like, I felt like I heard God saying that to me. And I didn't even know really what that meant. But it was part of that deal where it's synonymous to you, having a relationship with this organization, having a relationship with God. If I don't have a good relationship with any religious organization, I don't feel like I don't really have a relationship with God. And if I'm real active in the organization, I feel like I'm close to God. That's whacked, by the way. That's really messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you think so, too. It is. So, like I said, trying harder and even becoming a leader in that stuff, that's all I knew to do. That's how you pursue God. So, when I was in my 20s, I spent 3 years being a full-time roving worship leader, and I would go to churches and go play at conferences and did that stuff with a partner. And during that time, there was like a lot of strange like light bulbs coming on for me. One is that I would be spending time with people who we would think of as, well, big national Christian leaders and stuff. And I would see these people at conferences and whatever and kind of think, you know, there's not a one-to-one ratio between the stuff you talk and the books you write, etc., and then the way that I see your life. And I had a couple of really uncomfortable conversations with my partner, the last of which I just said flat out to him, the only time that I really see you being passionate about Jesus and a relationship with God is when we're on stage getting paid to do that. It's so disturbing to me. So that was a good time. Good time for me. And after that, I just felt like I had to be removed from the whole scene altogether. It's kind of like I had to go through detox. And I just couldn't set foot anywhere near a church building or organizational anything. If you want to make me mad, try to make me go to church with you during that time. And that, this had nothing to do with my relationship with God. I was getting closer and closer to Him, but I was dealing with all of this stuff that I was had been raised around, and it was an ugly time, and I was kind of angry during that time. Then I moved to Cincinnati to marry my wife, and I thought that moving to Cincinnati was I'm putting the nail in the coffin of any musical aspirations I ever had. Because I didn't know anyone here. All of my contacts were in Texas and in the South. Didn't know anyone here, and Dora started wanting me to come along with her to Crossroads. And we were engaged at the time, and I thought, I don't really know about that. That still feels weird to me. And as I got more and more involved around here, it was really strange. Two things happened. One is that I started to see more and more the heartbeat of this place, that this would be a religious institution that would be both against institutionalism and a spirit of religion. I don't have any paradigm for understanding that sort of scene. But if I could create an organization, it'd probably be about like this. You know, I know a lot of us feel that way. Boy, if I could create something, it'd probably be about like this. And then secondly is I heard God really speaking clearly to me. Son, it's not my desire that you be against all religious organizations. It's my desire that you would be free of them telling you who you are. Just want you to be free of that. So, okay, yeah, that's good news. It's good news to me. So, I should be free to either go or not go, and if I want to be a part, that's okay, and just be able to contribute, and that stuff doesn't tell me who I am in God, etc. So, for us to be embracing, you know, revolution around here, for us to be embracing death of religion, we're speaking my language there. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm just so into this series and have been so passionate about the stuff we've been doing and saying.
Are we happy he's around here or what? Yes, we are. That's fantastic. Hey, why don't we stand? Let's stand if you would. You know, all of us worship something. All of us have something that we get excited about. All of us have something that makes us get emotional, happy, sad. All of us have something that we think about most often. That's a thing that you worship, whether it's a promotion or family beautiful or body beautiful. And what God says in the scriptures is He is the only one we are to worship. He's the only one that we are to get emotionally fired up about and have our life revolving around. And you can do that a number of different ways. And one of the ways, we're going to do a number of those ways today, actually. One of those ways is to sing. And this is the last time you'll ever get a chance to sing in this building. Let's say that over and over and over again. We got a few songs we're doing today, but this is, you know, the last one. So God, as we stand and as we have some songs to go on today, I know that I feel you're pleased already with what's happening in here, and I pray that continues to happen. We just hear these words that many of us are going to put a tune to that we say to you. We're going to have the last time the bags are ever passed in this building.
Make it count.
Yeah, make it count. Dig deep, real deep. No. You know, if you're newer here today, we are not about your money or anything like that. We're about you encountering God. So feel free to let this thing pass by. Many of us, this is an act of worship where we have a chance to be generous and say, God, thanks for what you're doing in my life, and I want to build into other people. A lot of us also have never filled out a Connect card. It's your last time to fill out a Connect card in this building. You know, really. We're not going to sell the database or your information to anybody in Iowa. No one's going to show up at your door today with a loaf of bread trying to intrude on your, you know, your personal space. Just let us know who you are so we can connect with you. And so the ushers are going to pass that on, and we've got another song that we're going to do as we stay standing, right?
Yep.
All right, you can be seated. Oh, and guys, we're seating. You know, I'm just really struck by this group of people in this time. Many of us in this place have come to know who you are for the first time. Or many of us have come to know the real you that we didn't know before. So continue to do something special here today. All right.
I felt the same way.
You did?
I felt like in that song. I don't know. I just felt like could this be our... either our most militantly anti-religious group or the ones that are the most free from it.
You felt something special there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You feel that? There, it is interesting, you know,
you asked me a question, can I answer it?
Yes, well, he's sitting there just staring at me. He's going, I never know if you're going to get mad at me or going to swear at me. By the way, Brian, whoever Brian was, this is really good. Can I have a pizza, please? Brian, can I have a pizza? No, what did you feel there?
There we go. We're gonna have a chance to do this later, but like it struck me like when we're up on stage, you know, sort of playing music and we're asking you all to sort of participate with us. I know it's a little uncomfortable, but I have to tell you the highlight of my life is sitting right here and hearing all of you sing and knowing that I'm a part of a group of I'm not performing for you. I'm one of you. Mm. And I'm not any different from you, and we're sharing in this experience, and it feels, that in and of itself feels very revolutionary to me.
Mm. So. Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. Each of these services is just very organic. We've got a framework that we're going off of or some things we can change, but we're adjusting based on what it feels like. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just that I'm getting a little more nostalgic because this is the last, you know, one. This is the last one. Or if there's, maybe everybody has had enough sleep last night, the 11:45, or, you know, I don't know. But anyway, start just getting nostalgic thinking about the things that happened in this room. I don't want to look at people around here and pick you out, but I know a lot of the stories in here. I know, you know, people in here who had something not happened in this place, they would be dead now from suicide. I know people who had not been what happened in this place, you'd be divorced. I think I saw somebody earlier who was divorced, and then as a result of meeting here, you are not divorced any longer, remarried. I know there's people in here who are very far from God and never really wanted to know who God was. So that song, I Want to Know Who You Are, is something you never thought you'd say. And kind of the kernels of that might have started in this room. Thanks, God. Thank you. Thank you. So I was over several weeks ago over in Israel. I've turned 40. Went to Israel to get exploded. And turned 40. That's 11:45 special right there. Turned 40 and... about a half year ago, Libby and I started saying, you know, I got this 40th birthday thing coming up. What do we want to do? And we decided to funnel all of the energy and money we would towards doing something 40-ish, party or whatever, or gift or whatever, to go to Israel. So we went over with some friends of ours. And it was a pretty cool experience. It was different than I thought. I was hoping and thinking that as soon as I got off the plane in Israel, there'd be sort of this like, oh, you know, angels like in my ears. I left. Oh, I feel it. I feel the Holy Land. You know, and I kind of expected doing this whole tour to be going around and actually see where Jesus walked and go, oh, you mean that right there? And go, oh, I felt it right there. Oh man, I felt like Holy Spirit just saying right there or come along. Oh, you know, I just felt I have all these spiritual tinglies all over my body every time I was in this place, and that didn't happen. There were some awesome things that happened, but at that wasn't the place, and that wasn't the time. And I realized something that ties into today. A few things. First of all, every great thing God has ever done has happened in a place, at least everything on earth. Every great thing God's ever done has happened in a place. I was able to go and actually see places. Actual go to rooms, well, it's probably not, it's not the original room, but in terms of global positioning satellite, that spot where the actual upper room is believed to have been, where Jesus broke bread and with his friends right before he was arrested and crucified. Every great thing has happened in a place. And as our tour guide would take us to these places, it was an interesting guy in himself. He was a Palestinian Christian. And as he would take us to these places, he would say pretty much the same thing every time. He would say, now this place is based on tradition and generational eyewitnesses. Eyewitnesses where they believe that this certain thing happened. And he would say, however, we can't be certain, but we are certain of is it happened in this vicinity. And what, the most important thing is we know that it actually happened. And it was really cool when he would say that at every single site and every place. But it just got me thinking about the Holy Land in Israel is not holy because of the land. It's holy because of the person who did something in the land, and that is God. You know, no religious place is holy because of the land or the place. It's holy because of what God did in the place. And I had this religious baggage in me, the stuff that sometimes we have religious baggage, we need to shed it. Other times we have this religious baggage, we need to appreciate that not everything of religion is bad. And so for me, it was noticing that all of these sites, they had a building, a place that was erected over these things. And my religious baggage is, oh, this is ridiculous. Oh, come on. Like this happened in the basement of this church. Like I went to the place where Jesus was supposedly born. And, you know, and they had this little thing where he was born. And then they had a thing about 6 feet away where he was wrapped in swaddling clothes. And it was all marble and all this stuff was on. I'm like, oh, come on. This is, you know. Isn't this just like religion to, you know, institutionalize some place? But then as I started to learn more and more, I realized that if in fact this is where it actually happened, people over the last 2,000 years to expect that to go undisturbed would have been unrealistic because they want to mark moments. They want to preserve the place. We mark moments in this country. We can go home on 75 or 71. You'll see crosses driven on the side of the highway because someone's memorializing a place. But it's not the place. It's what took place in the place. It's not this room. It's not Crossroads, but it's what actually took place in this room. It's not who is in this room. It is the one who has been doing a life work in this room. There's a camera right above the exit sign here. Let's just say, hello, you in Video Cafe. Hello, you will be with us soon. Soon you will. And I'm doing this because I don't want to forget. We're going to do an exercise in a little bit. We would love for you guys to come in and be a part of that in a little bit. So before I forget that, I'm finding that I had this weird thing that started happening yesterday afternoon where I've been so fixated and excited about all the upsides of our new space, like having seats for people and new people and other things that I almost ran the risk of missing a moment this weekend. Let me explain this. I had this memory mid-afternoon yesterday about the last time I left a place of significance, and that was the house that Libby and I lived in, and the kids lived in for 7 years or so. We first moved to Cincinnati. We lived in a little apartment on Erie Avenue, And then after about 8 months or so, we found a house that was abandoned, so therefore we could afford it. House was abandoned in Mount Lookout, and fixed it up, and you know, and did that whole thing. And you know what a house is like when you first buy it? It's like, oh, it's perfect. It's awesome. I love it. Everything is just perfect. And then as your family grows or as your needs change, all of a sudden you start to notice the things in the house that bother you. Like things like now having a family of five and having one bathroom. Not one and a half, one bathroom. And things like, for us, feeling like we're always in a fishbowl anyway, and having a house where we have apartments right beside us with people staring out windows at us, apartments behind us, public walkway going on the other side of our house in the front, a very busy street, Linwood Avenue, and feeling like I never want to go outside my own house because I feel like people are looking at me. If they're not, I feel that, and I always feel like people are looking at me. You're looking at me right now. And so you start to notice these things start to really bother you. And then great stuff happened. We were able to buy another house that had more space and do some renovation remodeling on it. And so I did a similar thing to what I'm doing here in this space that we're remodeling. I'm going over there after work every day. I'm walking through the house of remodeling. I'm just getting so excited about it. Similar to right now, I go through our new facility that we're doing like once or twice a day. I just walk through there. And I do it because I like construction stuff. That's one reason. I also do it because it's really an act of worship for me. I think about God and what He's doing in our lives in this community. It just gets me excited. I actually go over there. I'm trying to get in the mode of the space. I take my laptop over and I do work in the new auditorium chairs. I'll take over letters I have to sign. I'll be over in the new space. So my mind is totally already there. I'm already thinking about the upsides of it. I'm totally, in many ways, attached to that place already. And then yesterday, about 3 o'clock, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have happen exactly what happened when we moved into our new house. Because I had already left the new house. It's like I've already left this place, but then I realized I hadn't. There was a key moment I had to do, and that was to celebrate what actually happened in the place. So I come home after work when the day we're moving out of our old house. And you know that you've gone to a new level financially when you can pay somebody to move you. You know that. You know, I haven't figured out the college savings or any of that stuff, but I said, all right, I'm going to pay somebody to move us. So I didn't move us. I came home at the end of the day, and there were some still movers moving boxes, and Libby was moving some stuff, and she was doing some deeper cleaning of the place because we had the new owners that were going to be coming over with family and friends, and we knew we had a tight deadline to get out of this house. And so I rushed in. I'm trying to pack in some stuff up. I'm sweeping, getting some little stuff done, and we're just about to walk out, and all of a sudden it hits me with the place that I'm leaving. I started noticing all the things that have happened in this place, and I started getting really sentimental and real emotional. I'm in this dining room that now looks so small when everything is out of it. I remember having 12, 14 people around our dining room table, sharing life with each other, building into each other, laughing. Remembering, I'll never do that again in this place. I remember going to the room where I do business with God every morning. This one corner of the couch, I would just sit with God and see if He might put any thoughts in my heart and read the Bible, journal. Did that every morning that I didn't sleep in. Every morning I would do that and say, I'm never going to do it again here. I remember the moments that He met me in a unique place right here. I go in parts of rooms and remembering places that I spanked my kids, you know, and for like a whole hour just in that one little place. What I mean by a whole hour, it's not like... No, I didn't spank him didn't spank him for an hour. But, you know, I don't want to make some, you know, statement here because I know a lot of us don't believe in that. And that's a cool. I'm not trying to convince you otherwise. But for us, to do that kind of discipline, it's like an hour. I have very fond memories of it. Because it's about a minute and a half of the actual swatting. And then you got about 59 minutes of debrief. You know, kid crying, and you're holding him on your lap, and you're hugging on him, and you're saying, here's why we did this, and you know, I love you, Daddy loves you, and here's the thing, and you're holding him close, and they're kind of sobbing, and I remember this one room, holding one of my kids, and just kind of whispering in their ear, and praying on them in their ear, and trying to build them back up, you know, and those moments, never going to happen again in those places. So I was trying to do all this stuff last minute. Let's pray together. It's before we pray. And everyone's all stressed out. No, we got to go. So we get to do that today. That's what we're doing. We're marking what's happened in this place, the memories that have happened in this place. There's a lot of them. My daughter was baptized right there. That was pretty awesome. whole family of five, this last Thanksgiving Eve, sat up right there, the first time all five of us sat together in this place as a result of schedules and kids being in kids club. That was awesome. Other things in here I'm thinking of is new territory we took in being creative and courageous here. I may remember Easter, years and years ago, we had like two bridges on stage. You remember that thing? You were around here? When we first started the church, we had these philosophies that we wouldn't alter on. One of them was our friends who really weren't going to church, they didn't want to come someplace, have to do anything public. So it's one of the reasons why we have the lights still relatively low. We need to make people feel comfortable. But we took that to an extreme, and we never gave people any chance to engage in ever, in any way, just were always anonymous. And so we said, man, let's try to break out of that. We think there might be something different to do. And so we had these two bridges up on stage, signifying here's us and here's God, and there's a chasm in the middle. We're separated from God, and that's what Jesus does. He comes across, spreads open his arms wide, takes the penalty of well, we deserve death on the cross, bridges the chasm so we can have a relationship with God. And then we had stage hands like move the stages together. They were little. They were probably only 3 feet high and 4 feet wide and pull them together. And then we said, and if you'd like to mark this moment, first time we ever did something like this, mark this moment to receive Jesus into your life and have a relationship with him for the first time, we invite you to come up and just walk over this bridge. And then we sat back and we were like, is anyone going to come? And like no one came. It was like crickets in here. You're wee, 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 wee. You're like, oh man, this is dying a brutal death. And then all of a sudden somebody gets up. One person after another. I remember one guy who was physically handicapped. We have a whole group of folks who are challenged in some way, shape, or form who come here in a bus. And this older gentleman with a cane. I remember him like going down the downside and all of his friends trying to hold him up. And he was just walking over there. It was killer. How many of you were here that day, and that was a day you gave your life to Jesus? I'm just curious. Anybody in here today? Anybody? One here? Anyway, a few up here? It's awesome. How about you guys? What kind of stuff do you remember in this place? The room? The rope. The rope. Oh, yeah. The rope that went all the way, and the scratch on the rope. Yep.
Whenever I'm walking off stage, or whenever I'm on stage, on Saturday nights especially, I always look for my wife. She's always sitting right somewhere around here. And I remember seeing so many times in the room, her sitting with a different young woman. And it's either a friend of hers or somebody that she's intentionally trying to build into and help along. And I just think, one, those people, she wouldn't have relationships with those people at all if it weren't for this place. And number two, these people probably wouldn't be anywhere near a church looking anything if it weren't for this place existing.
No, I didn't.
Well, I remember a series we did maybe 2 years ago where in that doorway and that doorway we had these tall plaques.
This is great, by the way. I never know you were going to say you're doing a different one every service. This is awesome.
I have a lot of fun there. There was an 18-inch lip around this platform, and the big reveal, the big ta-da, was that Rick Fields and I were going to stand up after the song on stage started, and we were playing guitars on these platforms that were made of the cheapest available materials. So, while we tap our feet in time to the music, this thing would be pitching wildly about and would be in danger of falling off. And I remember lying there being very still while people were coming in at the beginning of the service, and they'd, oh, there's plywood standing here. Let's shake it. Praying that nothing would happen. But I remember that, Brian, you gave as a challenge in your message, you said there is nothing anywhere that says that we have to go to church or we have to be part of the community. I don't remember what the specific wording was, but your challenge was, if that's the method that you've chosen, how much growth has happened in your life? And that was the beginning of the end of my independence, was that message. Mm. So this is where getting into community started for me.
Oh, man. God, thanks for Dave. You know, I think about many of the things he's been through around here and some of the bumps that only he and I will know. And I thank you that he's endured. I thank you that he's endured and he's here. Mm. You are getting all weepy. And Greg is the longest term band member by like 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks longer than Josh. It's Greg Hansen. And you've never heard him talk. Now you're going to hear it.
Well, I remember Josh being lowered from the ceiling.
Josh being lowered from the ceiling.
The Matrix.
The Matrix, yeah.
And, well, I guess just spending time in community with the guys in the band here, you know, before services. You know, I hang out a lot with them, but we don't just talk about music. You know, we spend a lot of time together and just, so that's something I'll remember.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg.
Well, I'll tell the other thing, but something Dave said about Kimmy, when my wife and I, for the first, I think, 6 or 7 years of our marriage didn't go to church together. She worked at a church, and I was sort of here, you know, on the weekends, so we didn't go to church together. And she was always sort of begging me to be around people, but I would always tell her that I hate people. Like, that was my thing. I would say that I hate people. I can't stand people. It gets better.
You've all been there.
But I think one of the reasons was I had such, I was so, I think, scared of people, and I felt really inadequate around people. So we started going to church together, and then she was like, we should get in a small group. So there's no way in hell I'm getting a small group. There's no way. There's no way.
And, not gonna do it.
No. And actually, someone here on staff now emailed me. He was like, hey, I'm gonna get this group together. You know, this couples thing and whatever. I was like, oh, jeez. So we started to go, and it was really uncomfortable for me. But much like Dave, me doing that, me sort of submitting to this idea of community sort of broke all those places in my life where I was afraid of people and I didn't want to talk to people. And I was really, I felt really inadequate. And all that stuff sort of started going away as soon as I started opening myself up to people and being vulnerable to people. And now I'm in an incredible A team with a group of people who I love dearly. And, you know, had it not been for, you know, being here, I would have never have been in any sort of environment like that.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad you're here, babe. Glad you're here. Book of Joshua tells a story about Joshua. That's what it tells a story about. And it's a story of the community of the nation of Israel, how they're brought out of slavery, brought out of bondage, and they're right at the Jordan River, ready to go into the promised land. The Jordan River was more than a physical barrier, it was more a psychological barrier. Well, they've never been over there, haven't done that before. It's sort of like I-75 is. You know? East doesn't go west, west doesn't go east. Have any Westerners in here, by the way? Any Westerners? Yeah, look at you. You are the pioneers. You are the brave ones who've gone over the psychological barrier to be here on the east side. And right before they're ready to go over in the promised land, this psychological barrier, this is what happens. Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. And in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And when across the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So they mark the moment, they make a place with 12 stones stacked up. Not to memorialize how great the people were, but to memorialize for all the people how great God was taking them through that. It was an act of worship. We can worship when we sing. We can worship when we think. Also worship when we build things, when we construct things. And we're going to have the opportunity to construct something today. Actually construct writing. If you've noticed, what in the world is all the writing all over these walls? People have been memorializing Jordan rivers that they crossed over in this place. And most of the time, the Jordan River was a psychological thing or a spiritual thing that they needed to get over in order to have a healthy life. They needed to get over in order to experience God to fullness. If you've not come to a place where you felt that you're broken or have never felt that you have ever been broken, you're probably not on the other side of the Jordan. You're probably still feeling like religion and your systems are serving you well, as opposed to the God who can only do in you what he can do. A lot of us have had Jordan River experiences. We've followed him. You got a Sharpie when you came in? You're going to have the opportunity to memorialize something God's done in your life. You notice there's stuff all over the wall, the floors. There's some of these I was just reading earlier. They're pretty darn cool. Within these walls, my marriage and my family and my life has been saved. Thank you, Lord, for bringing me here to free me from the life I was leading. I know I'm a better wife, mother, and person because of this place. I'm blessed. Somebody came up to me yesterday. They wrote somewhere in here, I think, because they got broken of an addiction. They had the United States of Addiction. They said, I don't have an addiction. That series, United States of Addiction. But they realized, in the midst of us describing it, that they did. It was an addiction to negativity. That they all saw everything with the glass half empty. Said every time you say something or someone from stage says, I always think there's some ulterior motive. Or anytime I see something on television, I'm always thinking the worst. And he said, I felt like God broke me, snapped me of that thing. And I actually see this guy, call him Mr. Positive. His name is Jerry. He's always smiling like a butcher's dog whenever I see him. He's always just kind of around. So to close out the service today and close out this place, we're going to do a song called Like Breathing. Praying like breathing. Many of us in this place don't know how to pray for the first time. Not some religious rote memorization of prayers, but to just give God our thoughts and our words as naturally as breathing. And this song was significant for that. So we're going to do this song. As you sit there, if there's anything that you want to say to God or memorialize as a thankfulness in this place, on the walls and on the floor, not seats, not doors, walls and floor, you can get up at the appropriate moment. And go ahead and write that down. Pray something like you're breathing, and then you're able to go. God, we do this as naturally as we breathe. We want it to be more natural to thank you. We want it to be more natural to remember the experiences of going from death to life. Thank you for every life in here, every Jordan River crossing. Hear these prayers. Hear this breath.